From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 15th day of May, 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Dave Chatterton will be here to look at the agricultural energies, and we'll discuss the weather forecast to him. That with Don Day along the way. We'll take a look into the trade talks that have been taking place between China and the United States, and of course at NAFTA. Both are at critical junctures, and we'll try to discern if there's anything that's moving forward there or not this week. Oh, and I'll apologize for something I said yesterday. I knew it as soon as it came out of my mouth, and I want to make sure that you understand that I knew it as well. So we'll do all of that during this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana will join us shortly, but let me take a moment to apologize for something that slipped out of my mouth yesterday as we were talking about the number of producers that had finished up in the area and the planting in the eastern part of Illinois. I know I said there were a few stragglers out there, and when that left my mouth, I knew I would be in trouble. Let me think about this just for a bit with you. You know, I've told you over the decades, since about 1985, that my brothers in Logan County, that's in the center part of the state, finish up about 10 days on average ahead of those in eastern Illinois, and that's because of the way the rainfall comes up into the eastern part of Illinois. It sweeps across eastern part of Illinois first and then into Logan County second. So they start before you do, but they get finished sooner too. And I was talking to them. They finished up on the 1st of May. Some of that has to do with just the way the rain fell. Some of it has to do with the transition from one generation to the other and the way the farms have been split up. And there's more equipment now available to get over fewer acres. And I just apologize that they had finished up a long time ago and it just came out of my mouth. Now, Wayne Nelson is here from L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Wayne, it was kind of an interesting day in Chicago. I know I looked and the beans were up and then suddenly they were down 8 or 9 cents and then they finished stronger. What happened?
We can't tell you for sure what happened. We're going to tell you what we think happened. First off, this morning, we were up a little bit, and then Terry Brandstetter said the two sides are still very far apart. And, of course, being the U.S. ambassador to, U.S. ambassador to China, that sort of hit the news wires, and we took off to the downside on that. We held the corn very strong in the meantime, though, because corn isn't affected much by the tariffs we've been talking about with Brazil. But then we saw corn beans spreading through the day, buying corn, selling the beans, which put more pressure on the beans. And then basically when beans got down to their Bollinger Bands and the support levels where they can go, why the spreading sort of quit, and the corn led the beans, went on up and run out of sellers in the beans, and they inched on back up, closed, very close to unchanged compared to about 10 cents off the low of the day. So that's what we think happened, and hopefully the next China rumor will be a good one.
So there was volatility there that producers and others were able to take advantage of, I suppose, during the day if they were watching it closely enough. However, it ended up being a bit of a turnaround Tuesday, which we kind of would have expected after yesterday's lower trade.
Yeah, I mean, basically, a lot of times, we've been bouncing off some good support and looking at some things that way. You know, some of the other things that happened is the dollar was up half a point today. The bonds seem to have some of the best sales they've had. That way, we're at a two-year high with the dollar against the real. The crude's at 3.5-year high. So a lot of things happening in the outside markets to drive things along that way. We got one news report out of Argentina today that one of the terminals down there, they're seeing 10 to 84% damage and 18 to 21% moisture on some of the beans that have been harvested in the last week. So that also could have brought the beans back if it was widespread news.
Yeah, so we've been talking about that in the weather segment. While they had a severe drought all season long that cut their yields, trying to get that crop out of the field has been just horrendous as the rains have come in and slowed them down tremendously. And they're still getting rains, I think, in Argentina that have kept that crop in really, really bad shape. I suppose over time we'll see that in the marketplace we already have, but it might continue to show up here and there. Looking forward into the rest of the week, what do you see?
Well, I think, you know, Informa come out today and they raised the corn acreage from 88 to 89 million acres. They raised the beans about to 500,000 acres, more like that. So that's one of the things we're going to be looking at and see how the people look at it. But we also saw that dryness in the northeast regions of China, along with reduced acres there, is going to produce a lot smaller corn crop and take the world stocks down quite a bit. So, you know, it does look positive for the corn right now. And I think the beans, they're listening to every little blip that comes out of the negotiations. You know, NAFTA, they set some time limits or wanting to have them done by May 17th to pass through. And they said that they didn't think that was going to happen. So that's not a good thing either, because we do need Mexico's and Canada's business.
Indeed. Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again on Thursday of this week for Commodity Week.
Yes, we'll be fun to see you there.
Wayne Nelson, of course, is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, a U.S.-China partial trade fix is on the table that, if it succeeds, could end retaliatory Chinese duties against U.S. farm goods. The mini-deal is in sight, according to a Washington Post source, who says China gets relief from U.S. sanctions on telecom equipment maker ZTE in exchange for China's, quote, return to the status quo for U.S. agriculture and other tariff and non-tariff relief. American Farm Bureau Trade Advisor Dave Samuelson says the latest back and forth over ZTE and U.S. ag could finally get the bullseye off of American farm goods.
This potentially could be a way out for some of these things. Maybe this is certainly part of what we want to have happen, which is a negotiated process, not using the tariff tool, but getting talk, using other measures perhaps to try to get past these issues of just going to tariffs to solve underlying steel and technology problems.
But the mere fact that the word agriculture comes up in the news accounts of a possible deal with China to ease trade sanctions may signal the extra attention the White House is giving the damage the fight is inflicting on U.S. producers.
And they've heard directly from the ag community, so I think they know it very well. Certainly brings up the idea that they are hearing directly about the tariff issues, potential issues we're seeing in trying to get U.S. product into Chinese ports, things that are being held up, that these kind of trade problems are really cropping up due to these tariff issues.
President Trump tweeted Sunday that he and China's President Xi are working together to give ZTE, the world's fourth largest smartphone maker, a way to get back into business fast. The tweet comes as U.S. officials expect to meet with China's top economic advisor in Washington, D.C. this week. If Trump's ZTE tweets are any indication, the administration seems to be moving towards short-term deal-making with China. Let's stay with trade, but with switch to NAFTA, President Trump and Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau discussed how to conclude a NAFTA deal during a phone call late yesterday. President Trump underscored the importance of quickly concluding the agreement. Trudeau's office said the leaders discussed the possibility of bringing the negotiations to a prompt conclusion. The call comes as NAFTA talks appear to have stalled following an intense round of meetings last week among top officials from the United States, Canada, and Mexico. Ministers from each country agreed to be on call for any potential meetings this week, but did not schedule another gathering. Technical level teams will keep trying to make headway as the pressure mounts for them to strike a deal yet this week. And finally, it appears Republican Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa is fed up with Scott Pruitt at the EPA and says if he doesn't start to scale back the biofuels waivers for small refineries, he's going to call for Pruitt's resignation. The demand ramps up pressure on the embattled EPA administrator. Well, that's a look at today's agricultural news. Well, yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It showed 62% of the nation's corn crop had been planted as of Sunday, just one percentage point behind last year. 28% of the corn crop has emerged, 35% of the soybean crop has been sown, 9 points ahead of the average, and 10% of the soybeans are up. 45% of the winter wheat is headed, just 36% is in good to excellent condition. Last year, that combined number was 51%. Now, here are the updates from Iowa, Illinois, Minnesota, and Indiana.
This is Ben Torrance, agricultural statistician for the USDA NAS. Iowa farmers were held to 3.8 days suitable for field work after storms left measurable rainfall across much of the state last week. Subsoil moisture levels rated 4% very short, 10% short, 69% adequate, and 17% surplus. Intermittent rain interrupted fieldwork and planting activities in portions of the state, but recent rains have failed to relieve the dry soil conditions in the southern one-third of the state. Iowa growers have planted 65% of the expected corn crop 4 days ahead of last year. While the southern two-thirds of the state already has 79% or more of the corn crop planted, North Central has almost three-quarters of the crop left to be planted. 26% of the corn crop has emerged. Soybean growers have 33% of the expected crop in the ground, led by farmers in southeast Iowa who have planted almost two-thirds of their expected crop. 5% of the crop has emerged. 92% of the expected oat crop has been planted, 1 week behind last year and 3 days behind the five-year average. 61% of the crop has emerged, 6 days behind last year and 5 days behind the average. Rain and warm temperatures have benefited hay acreage and pasture conditions statewide. Pasture condition rated 49% good to excellent, an increase of 9 percentage points from the previous week. Cattle and sheep are grazing on permanent pastures in many areas, and farmers are waiting for a dry spell to take their first cutting of hay for the year.
For the USDA NAS Upper Midwest Region Field Office, this is Ben Torrance.
This is Mark Schleusener, state statistician for Illinois with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. For the first time in a while, Illinois had temperatures that were above normal last week. Average temps ranged from 6 to 11 degrees above normal across the state. Rainfall was near normal at 88 one-hundredths of an inch, and it was variable across the state. Northern areas were 1/2 inch above normal for the week. There were 4.8 days suitable for field work last week. Subsoil moisture declined and is now 2% very short, 15 short, 76 adequate, and 7% surplus. Corn planting moved forward significantly by 42 points and is now 74% complete, compared to 65% 1 year ago and 56% for the five-year average. 14% of corn acres have emerged compared to 28% last year and 22% normally. Soybean planting is 29% complete compared to 14% last year and 12% normally. 1% of soybean acres have emerged on par with the five-year average. 14% of winter wheat acres are heading compared to 76% 1 year ago and 32% normally. The condition of the winter wheat crop was reported as 4% very poor, 8% poor, 35% fair, 45% good, and 8% excellent, a decline from 1 week ago. This has been Mark Schleusener from the Springfield, Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service.
This is Dan Loftus, state statistician for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office. Above average temperatures prevailed across the state, however, scattered thunderstorms late in the week kept producers in southern Minnesota from field work. There was an average of 4.3 days suitable for field work during the week. While some areas in northern Minnesota still report having frost in the ground, last week's warmer temperatures allowed farmers in many areas to apply anhydrous and dry fertilizer to fields, conduct tillage activities, and plant crops. Subsoil moisture supplies rated 0% very short, 4% short, 81% adequate, and 14% surplus. Minnesota's spring wheat was 59% planted. That's 7 days behind last year and 2 days behind the five-year average. 11% of the spring wheat crop had emerged, and that's 9 days behind last year and 15 days behind average. Oats were 60% planted. That's 5 days behind last year and 4 days behind average. 21% of the oat crop had emerged, that's 10 days behind last year and 13 days behind average. Barley planting was 45% complete, that's 6 days behind last year and average. 7% of the barley crop had emerged, and that's 6 days behind last year and 15 days behind average. Corn planting was 40% complete, 5 days behind last year and 8 days behind average. There were a few reports of corn emerging in the southern half of the state. Soybeans were 11% planted, that's 4 days behind last year and 9 days behind average. Pastures are starting to green up slowly across the state. Pasture conditions were rated 1% very poor, 8% poor, 29% fair, 57% good, and 5% excellent. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
This is Stephen Dothage with the Great Lakes Regional Office of the National Agricultural Statistics Service with the Indiana Crop and Weather Report. Higher temperatures and dry weather allowed for rapid planting progress last week. Recorded precipitation ranged from 0 to 1.81 inches. Major progress was made last week for what started off as a rather slow planting season, as percent planted shot ahead of the 5-year average and previous year levels for both corn and soybeans. While the dry conditions were ideal for planting, the lack of rain hindered crop emergence over the last week. Winter wheat growth progressed and caught up to the 5-year average for wheat jointing. Similarly, pasture and hay growth progressed slightly with the warmer temperatures, but were still slowed by the unusually dry weather. Other activities for the week included cutting cereal grains for silage, tile installation, tillage, spreading fertilizer, and moving grain to elevators. That concludes this week's Indiana Crop and Weather Report for the week ending May 13th, 2018. This is Stephen Dothage reporting.
Our thanks, of course, go to the state statisticians and their weekly updates of crop progress here on Illinois Public Media. Let's check now the agricultural energies. We're joined by Dave Chatterton. He's at the Powerline Group right here in Champaign County, Illinois. Hey, Dave, thanks for being with us.
Hey, Todd, thanks for having me. I hope things are well on your end.
You know what? Things have been going really well. I'm wanting to know a couple of things from you. So we've talked about the energies over time and the $70 crude mark, and we're above that again today. What difference does that make, really, and how did we get there?
Well, how we got there, I think, is a long story. It's more of a psychological number than any particular, you know, economic driver, or, hey, we start to lose economic, you know, GDP at this level, that level. It's really a very interesting spread between what we're seeing, let's say, in the London Brent crude and some of the Dubai and the other crude grids around the globe compared to our number. And those spreads continue to widen out. In other words, we've got about an $8 spread between WTI or U.S. crude and European or Brent crude. And that's the benchmark for a lot of Europe and Asia, and it continues to pull exports away. So even though we've got record crude oil production here in the U.S., even though we're running our refineries at a record pace and pushing out a record amount of product, exports are really the story of the day. And the U.S. is filling that void that was left when the OPEC cuts were instituted, and now we've got things like the Iranian sanctions and Venezuela and Nigeria and Libya and all the problem spots around the world. And we, as U.S., continue to up our exports to plug those holes, and we just haven't built any inventories, and we continue to see our prices gravitate higher because of that.
Are there any indications that the OPEC nation, Saudi Arabia, others will move to fill some of that gap?
They've certainly said that they are standing by to do it, but it's more with OPEC, it's always what they do, not what they say. So far, they haven't upped their production numbers. There's certainly enough spare capacity there between Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and a couple other members to fill any void left by the Iranian sanctions. But it's a question of will they? And the next OPEC meeting is scheduled for mid-June. To this point, they've said that they're going to hold their cuts or their current production schedules in place through the end of the year and possibly into 2019. And I think they've seen that what they've done has worked for them in terms of price and getting to the revenue targets that they want. And I don't think they're too concerned about tipping the U.S. or the global economy over the edge at this point. So really don't see them changing tack at this point in time.
Would the move higher in the crude oil be a normal seasonal move as we head into the travel vacation season for the United States and gasoline supplies?
Yes and no. It would be more so for gasoline. And, of course, gasoline, there's a lot of talk now that we're going to see $3 retail pump prices, you know, throughout the U.S. this summer. We've already seen it in a few states already. So seasonally, typically what we're doing this time of year are pulling down gasoline, you know, supplies as we go through the summer driving season, and then the demand is the highest, and we're building distillate supplies. We've got a decent amount of gasoline here in the U.S. Our supplies are close to our year ago levels and the long-term averages. What we've been seeing are our crude supplies, and particularly our distillate, our heating oil, and diesel fuel supplies slipping lower as those exports become a bigger piece of what we do. And so the seasonal pattern has been disrupted, if you will, both from a price perspective and an inventory or stocks perspective, by the OPEC cuts and by kind of this change in the global flow of oil, if you will.
Has the heating oil or diesel fuel gone along with the move higher in the crude and the gasoline?
Yeah, it certainly has. And I mean, values actually made new highs again for the move today. We're at around 225 in futures. That's about 20 cents higher than when you and I spoke about this around a month ago. And we're, you know, that market was at $1.80 in futures at the end of February. So it's taken a pretty substantial jump. And unfortunately, we don't see a lot of downside in that. Hopefully, you know, we got through the spring ag season here pretty well, but looking for a place to fill up for fall, we want to be a little bit patient here. But the market, I think you're going to have to set your sights pretty modestly for those drawbacks to try and get yourself filled up for fall. There's just not a good recipe right now where we start building inventories and putting significant pressure, downward pressure on prices.
Is there, like there is in other commodities, corn, soybeans, much of a difference between, or spread, that is, between the nearbys, generally speaking, and the deferred months for gasoline and diesel and crude oil?
Yeah, and there certainly is. I mean, you know, it's very much present in this market as well as it would be in the grains or the meats. And right now we've got a rather kind of flat, maybe just slightly inverted futures market, but we've got a cash market that's got some premium on the back end because of the uncertainty about supply. And so if you looked at a prompt, let's say fill price in central Illinois for retail diesel fuel or dyed diesel fuel versus what it would be in the fall, that fall premium is going to probably carry about a 15-cent premium at this point. And with, you know, let's just say, roughly speaking, you know, 225 futures, we're going to be looking at about a 245 dyed price in central Illinois today. Add on maybe 15 cents and get yourself to close to 280 for fall values. And again, not the best news, but hopefully we can find a little bit of a wrinkle here.
What do we know about the propane supply and demand?
Yeah, very similar to what we've seen in the refined fuels. Propane stocks, unfortunately, are very low to start the season, and typically they have the seasonality there is they bottom out typically late, you know, early in the, or just past the first of the year, February, March, and start building through the summer. You know, last year they bottomed out. I think around 41 million barrels. The year before that, 63 million. This year we're starting national inventories at 39 million barrels. And to see that number, we're really starting behind the clock. Normally you want to see that value, or excuse me, those inventories rise through the summer and get to about 100 million barrels by the time the fall starts. And it would take literally, you know, builds of over 4 million a week and kind of a record pace to get to that. So prices there also are elevated. The upside looks greater than the downside. And again, we're looking for prices, looking for any softness in the market to get some coverage on for the fall and winter months here.
Yeah, thanks so much for a really detailed look at the marketplace today. I appreciate it.
Good to be with you, Todd. So.
That, of course, is Dave Chatterton with the Powerline Group. He is right here in Champaign County, joins us on this closing market report for Tuesday afternoon. When we come back, we'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast. Don Day will be here from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Don't forget, you can always pick most of our programming up in its entirety off our website at willag.org, willag.org. You can play it right there, or you can use any of the podcast apps that you like. Stitcher is a good one. SoundCloud is a great place to go. You can use iTunes and the Google Play Store too. You're listening to the closing market report for Tuesday afternoon. Don Day is here. He's from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. How are conditions where you are today, Don?
Well, getting very spring-like, and luckily in some areas of the Western High Plains, some areas, not all, have gotten some very beneficial rains over the last week or two. And that's helped out some of the winter wheat areas of northwest Kansas, portions of Nebraska, and northeast Colorado.
And then if you go to the northern plains, they would be doing wheat, barley, edible beans, but corn and soybeans as well. How are they doing at this time?
Well, the cold weather in April certainly has an impact in terms of planting times and where things are right now, but we really have had a nice turnaround here in the month of May so far. Temperatures have been able to rebound, and looking ahead over the next week to 10 days, for most of the U.S., temperatures more often than that are going to be average or a little bit above average, as the pattern is going to favor those warmer temperatures. And A pattern that's going to bring occasional precipitation. Those northern areas maybe not going to be as moist as some areas in the northern and central Corn Belt, but well-timed rains, we see that in those northern areas.
Okay, so it sounds like the Corn Belt set up to have kind of a nice transition from May, maybe into the very beginning of June where they get some rainfall. Is it as much as normal, do you think, over that time frame?
Well, certainly it will be at those levels. I do think there will be some above areas of moisture, especially along the Interstate 80 stretch, across central eastern Nebraska, across Iowa, central northern Illinois, northern Indiana, southern Minnesota, southern Wisconsin. Those areas have been favored recently for some pretty good rain and frequent rains, and I see that as the same area that may in a few locations get a little too wet, but certainly there's not going to be a lack of rain in the Corn Belt that we see anywhere. Maybe the southwestern areas of the Corn Belt, maybe portions of eastern Kansas, portions of Missouri not as wet, but other areas look good.
Over the last decade, we've watched what we think of the Corn Belt spread, at least Corn Belt crops, corn and soybeans, to the northwest. They've also spread into the southeast, and they played a pretty important role last year as they had some really good yields in some states like Georgia and Louisiana, Alabama. Any condition in the southeast that we need to worry about?
Well, some of those areas in the southeast have been dry this winter. Now, the forecast has gotten a lot more wet for the southeast, especially Florida, and it does look like they're going to see some pretty significant rain here over the next week to 10 days, and maybe even a little bit further than that. So any dry concerns in the southeastern states are rapidly going away.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking all the time with us.
Thank you, sir. Have a good week.
You too. Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Helps us wrap up this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.